Hour number two of 3D. Darren McFarlane, Willie Dunnick here with you on this Friday morning. D-Mace will be back with us next week. You just made the list coming up to kick off the third hour of the program. Right now, we'll talk a little bit about the Titans and their big game Monday night against the Indianapolis Colts at Nissan Stadium. Cameron Wolf covers Titans for ESPN. Cameron, how you doing? Good morning.
Good. How y'all doing?
Doing wonderful. So I guess some of the big questions are the health of the Titans. And we'll just start at the elephant in the room. Everybody wants to know, you know, what is the status on eight? How has he looked this week? You're not sure. I realize we're probably not going to get anything, but your vibe of just being out there every day, we're not. What is your vibe on the status of Marcus Mariota and his availability on Monday?
Well, as far as earlier this week, maybe even as early as Thursday before practice, I thought there was a lot of optimism. I probably would have said the chances were about 50-50. But there seemed to be a little bit of a shift in the parade of optimism, so to speak, yesterday. And Mike Mularkey basically letting us know that he has to see more than he's seen from Marcus so far for him to play. And that was the biggest clue or the biggest comment that we've got all week from Mularkey as far as what Marcus hasn't been able to do. But what we've been able to see on the field, he's been able to take snaps from under center, drop into about three or five-step drops, hand the ball off to running backs. But he hasn't shown a lot of lateral movement in the pocket, and that's really the last step, that pocket mobility, so that you know when the Colts are coming with a blitz or pressure that he's not going to be a sitting duck in the pocket. So, you know, today's practice will be big. This is what they're treating as a Thursday practice since they have the extra day. So this will probably be the final full day where they go through, you know, a lot of the team periods, and it probably be important for Marcus to get some reps in that area to progress. So I think it's still pretty questionable. I'm eager to see what he does today. But I think it'll end up being a game-time decision regardless to keep the Colts guessing.
Willie and I have been covering the team and around them since they arrived here in Nashville, and we've seen some pretty good backups in the past, whether it was Neil O'Donnell or Billy Volek or Matt Hasselbeck or Kerry Collins. I mean, they've been really lucky in the past with some of their backup quarterbacks. If they had something like that in place, something that everybody felt really good about, at least for a short period of time, I think it changes this whole conversation. But because of what they have behind number eight and what we saw play out down in Miami, it kind of changes the conversation, because to me, we know he's not going to be 100%, but like, what is the percent? Is it 75 to 80%? Like, what is the magic number for them to say, we know he's not going to be 100%, but this percent of Mariota is better than what we have behind him?
Right, right. I think that's the question they're discussing in the rooms. I don't know if it's necessarily a number more than how much is he able to do. Like, if he's a guy where I don't think they'll put him in there if they feel like he can't move left to right, if he can't avoid a blitz, if he can't shake off a passer. But do you let him move if you don't think that he can get to the sideline, or if he can't get outside the pocket, if you're worried about his hamstring getting tight at halftime? I think those are all questions that they'll have to answer as far as him. And does he have a risk of re-injuring it? The hamstring is the injury, as we've seen with Corey Davis and DeMarco Murray earlier this year. That's an injury that can easily be re-injured, and it can worsen. So if you feel like, you know, he can go out there and play at 80%, but he can tear that hamstring and be out for 6 to 8 weeks, then they're not going to put him out there. So I think there's a little bit of added urgency because this is a game against the Colts where, you know, the loser drops into the cellar, but you also have to decide what's the long-term best play for Marcus.
Let's go over some of the other injuries. Let's start with Taylor Lewan, who obviously had a tough Sunday down in Miami, spent most of the time on the sidelines. What's his status, and maybe update us on some others?
Yeah, I think Taylor will be good to go. He was limited yesterday in practice. his mobility is going to be the thing with him. It's that knee injury. They didn't say exactly what it is, but it's probably some type of tweak or sprain in the knee. It seems like something that he's going to play with. He may not be 100%, so you might have to watch if he potentially re-injures that or if it affects his skill level. But I think he'll push to go. Corey Davis will be out, and Jonathan Cyprian will be out as well. Both of those guys, Jonathan Cyprian will be out against Cleveland. He's probably not going to be back until after the bye. Corey Davis is a guy that could push to play against Cleveland, but he may be another guy that sits out until after the bye. And those are really their major injuries, guys that are really in danger of missing, you know, the next week or two.
Cameron Wolf is with us, covers the Titans for ESPN.com. Cameron, I really enjoyed the piece on Adoree Jackson and his mom. And for people that haven't seen this, Adoree's mom is going to be honored as the 12th, I guess, 12th person on Monday Night Football. Really cool story. And, you know, she's a cancer survivor, and that's a big initiative, of course, for the NFL. So tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, no, Adoree's mom was great. I talked to her for about probably 30 minutes on the phone yesterday, and she's the nicest lady. And she was just, you know, she calls Adoree Sweet Pea. That's a nickname that he's got since he was about a year and a half. She told me the story, basically said that they were bringing in groceries one day, and she was trying to give him a loaf of bread to take in the house, and he looked at her like she was crazy and said that, "I'm going to grab the 2 gallons of milk and carry it into the house as a one-and-a-half-year-old." So from that day, she talked about, called him Sweet Pea, basically a message to him being small but mighty. So that kind of stuck with him. But the story tried to tell, you know, some of the lessons that she taught Dory, and then some of, you know, the strength that she showed him and how that helped him advance. You know, she was diagnosed with breast cancer in May of 2015, and her first thought was not to tell Adoree. She didn't tell him until Christmas break. Because she was worried about it affecting his grades, affecting his mindset, because they're so close. But luckily, when she was able to tell him officially the news in Christmas, she had just learned 2 weeks before that she was cancer-free. So it was sort of the good news, bad news combo that she was able to deliver during Christmas break. So I just thought it was a good look into what she's done, and you know, her being honored this weekend and the impact she's had on Adoree's life.
We enjoyed talking to him in the preseason. He's obviously a real wide-eyed kid, confident, and it's vital for him, Cameron. As you know, the way the roster is set up right now, they really need him to continue to get better. And he's battling out there. He's getting tested every week. He's not the biggest guy. When you talk to the coaches, how do they feel about his progress, and how much better do you think he can get?
Yeah, no, I think he can be a really good player. I think the thing that's tough for us as media, for fans and people outside of the rooms, is that we don't know how much this is different from maybe what he was learning in college and how much he has to catch up. This is a guy who played basketball and ran track for most of his life, so he's still learning the cornerback position. The best part of his game is that he's an athlete and that he has the ability to do just about anything that you need him to do, with size being one of the main deterrents. So I think that he'll continue to grow. I think he's one of those guys that maybe 2018, 2019, we look at him and say, you know, Adoree's a number one corner for this team. It may not look like that right now. He may go through his struggles. There will be some games where he's the weakness that teams try to target. But I do think that he has upside, and the coaches tell me that they're excited about his long-term future, and they believe that he can be a difference maker as a returner and a cornerback for a long time in this league.
Cameron Wolf is with us, ESPN Titans beat writer. And, Cameron, I'm guessing you were on hand when Rishard Matthews shared his latest view, and I don't think it surprised anybody. He's been very passionate about the subject. Even though, I guess, is it fair to say the league initiative is trying to move forward out of more of this protest during the anthem, or at least take some of the focus off of that? But Rishard has been very adamant about it. He's continued to do his thing. I'm curious, is the team still behind the scenes? Are they still okay with him doing this? Are they supportive of him doing that? And he obviously still has a job to do on the field, and they need him to be a very productive wide receiver.
And why did he delete the tweet if that's the way he felt?
Yeah. Yeah. No, those are definitely reasonable questions, and we hope to get a little bit more answers from Rashard today. He wasn't in the locker room yesterday to answer any of those questions. But I think first, from Rashard's perspective, I know I've talked to him several times. He feels strongly about his stance, and he feels like he doesn't want to be forced to change that stance. You know, he's already donated $75,000 to oppressed communities. He's, you know, stated his views on racial injustice and police brutality. As far as bringing it up in this elk, I think, and like I said, we'll talk to him later today. I don't know if that was the best route to go about, one, putting it on Twitter, and two, quickly deleting it, because it sort of leaves a lot of openings on what your true intentions are. And making a stance like that is only going to bring a lot of attention. So if that's what he wanted, then that's something that he should, you know, be able to stand up and tell us his reasoning and stand behind whatever stance he has. But if that's not what he wanted, it brings definitely a distraction to the team, because, you know, obviously he's under contract. This is his second of a 3-year contract, and saying that you'll, you know, quit if the NFL changes a rule is something that's going to open eyes from the coach to the GM, to the players in the locker room around him. So I know his teammates and coaches and GMs probably have been asking him a lot of questions today. We'll try to ask him some questions later in the locker room, because it does open up another can of worms with his comment, whether he stands by it or he has something else to say.
It, you know, when I really sit there and think about it, we had a really interesting conversation with him in the preseason before it really started picking up, the whole anthem thing, the Donald Trump comments. But one thing that strikes me is he might have the most unique perspective on this whole issue of anybody in the NFL, because he played with Colin Kaepernick. He's very close with Colin Kaepernick, having played together at Nevada, and his military background with his father and his brother. So I think he's a guy that has really taken this to heart. He's thought about it deeply. And so I think you have to respect, at least, that he's not just being flippant about this whole thing. This is something that's very passionate to him.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. And I talked to him last month when the Titans had stayed in the locker room, and that was a big issue. And one of the things that he told me was that, I don't want this to be a publicity stunt. Like, this is something that he fully stands with Colin Kaepernick with, in his stance. He feels like, you know, racial injustice and police brutality is a huge issue. And like you mentioned, the common excuse or the common deterrent for people who don't agree with this method of protest is that they feel like it's a disrespect of the flag and the military. But you're looking at a guy who has a father that served 23 years in the Marines and whose brother died in Afghanistan serving the country. So that sort of is a tough argument to make when it's a guy who clearly had a lot of military through his blood. So I think his stance is trying to make that you can support the military and have this stance. And as we go through these protests and see how player stances evolve and how the NFL responds to it, it's going to be continually important to get different voices with different perspectives, so that we don't have one single-minded view of the way this whole issue should be handled.
What is your take, Cameron, on this? Because to me, when you think about it, whether you agree or disagree, and I think most people understand what's going on. I just think right now the fans have made it abundantly clear. This is just my opinion, just trying to read the room, as we say. Fans, they can't get past the timing. It's all about the timing of where this is taking place. And mm-hmm. they can't get past that, whether it's for the right reason or not. Even if they're on board, they can't get past where it's taking place. And it's very clear there is a big portion of fans, because of the outrage and because of all the stuff that's been happening over this with the fans, that is the hang up. And I don't know, I think to me it's very clear they're not going to get past that. I mean, they're not going to change the fans' mind. So where are you on that? Do you agree with that assessment, or what is your take?
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of black and white as far as people views points in this issue. And like many issues in America, whether political or otherwise, if you're on one extreme, it's going to be very hard, if not impossible, to draw you from one side or the other.
Yeah, fair
Typically,
point.
Typically, the people typically the people, the message that people are trying to do is to sway people in the middle, people who are not necessarily formulated a decision one way or the other, to try to shift that viewpoint. Otherwise, it's just two sides yelling at one another at something that's not necessarily going to get growth. For me, I'm a big supporter of players voicing their right to protest, their right to speak in the manner that they feel like is appropriate, to use their platform. I think oftentimes we don't see athletes as people as much as we should, and they have thoughts and ideas and ways to change the world, and I believe that we should absolutely let them use their platform to do that. As far as the protests, I, like I'm sure many people do, am a little worried that the message has been misconstrued, whether that's because of President Trump's comments, whether that's because of media coverage or players not being clear enough with their message. The initial message was against racial injustice and police brutality, which I believe is an issue. I believe that a lot of people in America, if they were able to pay attention to what's going on, would see it as an issue. And I think it's something definitely worth bringing attention to. As far as the method, I'm not in their shoes. I know a lot of people would rather this thing be quieter, not to go into the anthem. But I did see the Cowboys trying to do a unity stance before, and they were booed before kneeling before the anthem. And I saw an NHL player raise up his fist during the anthem, and he was booed as well. So I'm not quite sure exactly what type of route people would want them to do otherwise to get their message across.
Yeah, good stuff, Cameron. Really appreciate it. At Cameron Wolf on Twitter, and you can also read his stuff on ESPN.com. Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
All right, that is Cameron Wolf. That was well said.
I think he's had really good stuff on ESPN.com. I think he's done a nice job just coming in. I think he covered the Raiders before. Is that right? His background? And he, I think, has picked up the beat and done very, very well. Good insights, good breakdowns of games. I think he's doing a good job.
What did you think of what
I've never met Cameron. I don't even know him. Yeah. That's the first time we've had a chance to have him on the show.
Yeah. What did you think of what I said and what his response was? Do you agree? You feel differently? Feel like it's so muddy now? Because I think that's what he was saying. It's so muddy right now that maybe it's hard for anybody to even go – to even now figure out even what's going on, because the water is so muddy from all this stuff.
I agree a lot
like,
of
like, what do you what
I
you
agree with
for?
A lot of
from
what
the
Cameron,
comments is this from racial yeah. injustice? Where are we? What do you know?
I am 100% in agreement with what Cameron said. I think an athlete has the right to use the platform. At the same time, I'm also thinking that the next chapter has yet to be written on how do you take this passion, your desire to create some change to the next level. And I think the anthem thing has sort of run its course to a degree. I think the league is trying to move forward from that. Let's take the focus off of the anthem, because as you said,
that's what I think people
that's
can't
what
get
turns
past.
A lot of
yes.
people off. And so is there a better way now that you've made your point? Because I think it was a worthy thing to do. To create this discussion, it was a firestorm, and it got everybody talking, and it was passionate, which was what I think they set out to do, have a response, particularly to the comments from the president, which I thought were out of line. It deserved a response. But now let's find a different angle. Let's keep it going, and let's see if we can get the teams to back you up. I think the NBA has done a pretty good job of taking initiatives like that where it's not – it keeps going. There's a more of a movement collectively by everybody, and it's not just guys here, guys there on their own. I think it's more effective the more people you have involved, and you could separate it away from issues that are bogging it down, and that is specifically the anthem.
He brought up
the anthem is a turnoff.
Right.
At this point.
That's what I said. That is, you're not going to, those fans, they're not going to be swayed. They're and not going to be changed to feel differently. They have made it abundantly clear the way they feel about this. Because of, like I said, it's all about the timing. It's not about the message. It's about the timing of the message. And those fans that are outraged, and we know it's now, it's a lot, okay? It's significant. you're not going to change their minds. So to your point, don't back off of the message. Maybe find a different way. He brought up the NHL player. I think it was JT Brown, right, on opening night? But has he done it since?
I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know if he's been consistent or if it was just their opening night game that he had his fist up in the air. We'll take a break. If you want to weigh in, talk to us, 737-1025. We'll take your phone calls. We'll come back with more of 3D next on 102.5 The Game.